Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
If you could interview any living artist, who do you think it would be?
That's Mick Jagger. You may be more familiar with his singing than his speaking voice.
You could be running a major museum soon.
It's part of the movie The Burnt Orange Heresy, and he's talking about the Duluth Art Institute. Duluth plays a starring role.
What is this about?
Plus, 9 months into the pandemic, how well are Wisconsin businesses weathering it?
There's been weddings, you know, that have canceled. So people have done little backyard weddings. Kind of what hurt us this year was no prom this year.
We'll hear from two in our region. Those stories and the regional news and review after this. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Everyone is familiar with Mick Jagger as a singer, but he's also an actor, and his latest movie isn't about painting it black, but The Burnt Orange Heresy.
Think of the splash it would make.
It's an art thriller that features Jagger as a collector who heaps praise on the Duluth Art Institute. Duluth itself gets a supporting role with several mentions throughout the film.
Duluth seemed a bit unlikely, didn't it, really?
In which way?
Well, you know, that's where she was from, really. Just like she said. Tiny town, south of the city.
The film had its initial premiere in March, and if you missed it, you're not alone, because that's when the pandemic lockdowns began. It finally premiered in Duluth at the West Theater this past week and ended its limited run on Wednesday. But it's destined to be a local classic, and we're sure it'll be back. And it's also available on Amazon Prime. With me to talk about the movie and the newly reopened theater is Bob Boone, owner of the West Theater on Central Avenue in West Duluth. Welcome to Simply Superior, Bob.
Thank you, Robin. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're also joined by Christina Woods, Executive Director of the Duluth Art Institute, who will tell us about the true life secret of the DAI that Jagger reveals in the film. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you, Robin. Happy to be here.
And we also invited Mick Jagger, who, well, okay, he didn't make it, but we did get as far as getting a message to his people, who related that he was unavailable. He does have an open invitation to the show, though. And full disclosure, in flashing lights with all capital letters, I am the board president of the Duluth Art Institute. But I can assure you that we would be doing this show and talking about the movie or any movie that mentioned the Institute or Duluth or Superior as much as this one does. So, Christina, you've watched it at least a couple of times. What's it about?
The movie is, like you said, Robin, a thriller. Jagger plays a collector who makes a rather provocative commission, a request from the art critic, which sets up a moral dilemma. And Duluth is sort of symbolic of the paragon of virtue, or at least truth.
Wow, I didn't know we had such powers.
We certainly must. It's really exciting, and it's sort of, in some ways, stunning and surprising. I've seen it twice now, and each time I'm like, oh yeah, dang, that happened. So basically, it's a thriller about art collection, the power of a critic, and how sometimes art gets moved around.
All right. Well, Bob, you noticed the many mentions of Duluth, and you told me you loved the film, but you were expecting a little bit more about Duluth. Without plot spoiling, what did you mean by that?
Well, what I meant by that was the character whose roots are from Duluth, the fact that it comes up so often and other people react with upturned eyebrows at the mention of it, it sometimes appears that perhaps the director was giving us a red herring, leading us to believe there was another curveball coming, and I kept looking to see if it was coming. I'm very carefully not telling you the plot spoiler that isn't there.
Okay. Christina, Mick Jagger's not the only one in the movie. It also stars Claes Bang as the art critic, and his Danish name is awfully close, I think, to Bong, a Swedish name popular in these parts. Elizabeth Debicki as the mysterious woman who may or may not be from Duluth or nearby. And Donald Sutherland as the reclusive artist. The main character is an art critic who the plot centers around. There's a woman he gets involved with whose background will keep in suspense. A reclusive artist, and Jagger's character is the collector who has a challenge for the critic, and I guess we'll leave it at that. He's the one who mentions the DAI, and let's listen to that clip.
Where are you from?
Duluth.
Minnesota. Mm-hmm. The Art Institute there. It used to have a really lovely Toulouse-Lautrec, but no more.
So, is that true about the Toulouse-Lautrec?
That is absolutely true. I don't have information as to when that piece was donated, but in 1990, there was an auction which sold 8 pieces that the Duluth Art Institute had held over time. Some of the pieces were as old as 100 years old and were in the collection. One of those was one of Toulouse-Lautrec's Jane Avril lithograph. And we're not sure if it was the serpent rendition, if it was the Moulin Rouge rendition, what color it was printed in, because it was a lithograph. So we're hoping somebody who hears this will say, I know which one, and will contact us so we can keep adding information about this to our archives and the legacy of the Duluth Art Institute.
Right, and it was part of a former collection by the DAI that we no longer have, right?
Correct.
And was sold off to a gallery, we think we know?
That is correct. This particular piece was sold for the most amount of money at around $28,000.
What?
Yep, and we don't know which gallery it went to, although there's a couple newspaper articles that name a couple galleries because folks from those galleries were attending the auction. So we could possibly do a little research and reach out to those galleries and find out if we can actually get more information. But it did definitely sell for the most.
Mm-hmm. And when you say it was a lithograph, this is one printed by the artist in a very limited edition, I understand.
Yep. I believe there were 5 that were printed, and the Art Institute of Chicago holds one of them.
All right. Well, maybe they'll loan it to us so we can see an old friend. So, well, that's a true story. And the whole movie centers around truth, which, again, we're trying very hard not to give it away. The movie is based on a 1971 book by the late pulp fiction writer Charles Williford, who was quite a Renaissance man. He was a soldier. He was a literary critic, I believe, for the Miami Herald. And a very eclectic career. There are many differences and changes in the movie. They set it in Italy instead of Palm Beach. Both the movie and the book play up, though, fictitious characters. And if I didn't say this, I've read the book already. So there's this mixture of fictitious and real people, both in the book and in the movie. An example is a line in the book about the reclusive artist who, in the book, is French rather than American in the movie. So Williford writes that the artist, quote, may or may not have influenced Samuel Beckett to write in French instead of English, as the literary critic Leon Minlin has claimed, close quote. Okay, so the reclusive artist is fictitious. Samuel Beckett was very real, and Leon Minlin, I never heard of, but maybe he was real. So there are these hurt-your-head moments both in the book and the movie.
Oh, my goodness.
But the DAI Toulouse-Lautrec story is true, except, and this is weird, it wasn't in the book because it hadn't happened yet when Charles Williford wrote it in 1971.
That's true.
You know, Elizabeth Debicki does make an interesting character, not the superficial blonde kind of thing. But also I thought Donald Sutherland, who we haven't been talking about, is, you know, a highly recognized, sought-after actor in a vital role in this film.
He plays the reclusive artist.
Right, but we didn't really talk about him at all. And he's a big enough name, I think, that he adds stature to the film.
Right. I mean, we should point out that this is a big film. This is, again, if you didn't hear of it, well, that's the fault of this whole pandemic thing. But and that doesn't guarantee that it would have been the biggest moneymaker or whatever it is, by definition, an art film. But you don't just have any film that has Mick Jagger and Donald Sutherland, let alone Klaus Bang and Elizabeth Debicki.
Absolutely.
We're speaking with Christina Woods, executive director of the Duluth Art Institute, whose institution is featured in the film The Burnt Orange Heresy, and Bob Boone of the West Theater in West Duluth, which just ran the film. So, Bob, tell us about the reopening and how social distancing at the movies works.
Well, Robin, the correct answer is nobody has any real idea how everything's going.
Welcome to the COVID world.
Correct. Welcome to the COVID world. The West Theater reopened in June of 2019 after 3 years of restoration, attempting to make it the most authentic, streamlined, modern Art Deco theater we could.
And when you say reopen then, you mean reopen after years, right?
Correct.
The current incarnation.
Current incarnation began in June of 2019, or opened in June of 2019. The theater itself had been vacant since the 7th and was, I guess you'd say, a shell plus one working bathroom. No marquee, no box office, no screen, seats, projectors, furnaces, fussy things like that. We searched 20 states, Canada, England, Portugal, and Spain, looking for authentic theater components and decor. We opened in June of 2019 to rave reviews, struggled along trying to grow the business, and we finally reached break even in February of 2020, and the governor ordered us close in March.
Again, the story of COVID. And I should point out that one of the reasons you were attracted to doing this theater was to bring a theater to West Duluth, correct?
Correct. And I had some experience with theaters when I was younger. I was the manager of the Classic Palace Theater in Superior, Wisconsin. Almost simply Superior.
That's right. All roads lead to Superior. So you open in June. You gain momentum. You brought movies back to West Duluth. You started making it break even in February. March, you closed. And when did you reopen?
We reopened the reopening in July. The governor gave us permission to reopen in June, but, you know, there were a lot of mysteries in the COVID world at the time, and I wasn't prepared to think we had a good plan that was likely to keep people safe at first, so I took an extra month trying to do a little bit of research and looking at angles, and we are reopened in July. It's a little bit like the Three Bears. There's buildings that are too small to be safe. There's buildings that are too big to be practical with today's restrictions. And the West appears to be just right. We have a huge old auditorium that could seat 250 people. And with COVID restrictions, significantly less. We invested in software that automatically segregates every group by 6 feet. So if Christina sits in row D watching Burnt Orange Heresy in seats 6 and 7, the computer's blocked off the rows in front of her, in back of her, the two seats to the left, and the two seats to the right. We also can feed everybody in from the right and exit them out the opposite way. We instituted face masks before the governor did, and we still take people's temperature upon admittance. And it's led us to turn away a few people already.
And I would expect that, people might be turned away themselves thinking, well, I don't want to see a movie like that, but I'm going to give you an endorsement because I went the other day, obviously, for the Burnt Orange Heresy. And yes, there were not that many people there. Of course, we expect that. But you know what? It still is watching a movie in a movie theater the way it's supposed to be watched. And frankly, you could take advantage of the disadvantage because you've got, you know, a whole lot of space in there. And as you said, there was definitely space between us and the other people. It rode behind us and in front of us.
Yep. Another oddity is we are also set up and equipped pretty well as a concert hall. And at the moment, I believe there's only two concert halls in the entire state operating, Chanhassen Dinner Theater and the West Theater. Naturally, people are experimenting with how to reopen. I think a couple of others, including the Deck and Medina Ballroom, will be beginning some tentative steps into reopening auditoriums.
Mm-hmm. But you're one of the only ones, or...?
At the moment, I'm one of only two that I'm aware of.
And, of course, the only one that was playing The Burnt Orange Heresy. As I pointed out, the film had its debut, or was scheduled to have a debut, in New York and Los Angeles on March 6th, I think, was the date. And, of course, that's the time that all the lockdowns started. It did have a showing in Minneapolis, I think sometime around May or June, which was supposed to be the reopening of theaters there. That didn't happen as well as people were hoping. And so this is the third debut, if you want, or something. But you can see it on Amazon Prime. And I think if we twist Bob's arm a little bit, we could get it back. Once things return to something called normal.
I think it depends on what our definition of normal is.
Right. Again, we're talking to Bob Boone of the West Theater in West Duluth and Christina Woods, Executive Director of the Duluth Art Institute, which has a mention, along with many mentions of Duluth, in the movie The Burnt Orange Heresy. Christina, the Duluth Art Institute is another venue that closed for the COVID, but what's going on now?
So our galleries are open at the St. Louis County Depot in downtown Duluth. Our galleries are open Tuesdays through Sunday. We are requiring masks and social distancing. We also have an app that you can download called Smartify. So you can interact with the art in the galleries personally on your phone. So I feel like the social distancing protocols and the mask protocols have been working really well. And I'm hearing that at the West Theater, that even the food service is very well formatted for safety.
Well, I have to say, when I went there, I was hesitant on popcorn. Nothing against your popcorn. You went all over the world, I think, to find the popcorn maker. Correct, Bob?
Good memory, Robin. The wonderful, weird, stupid part of the story is I wanted to have an authentic old popcorn machine, and I discovered one down by La Crosse, Wisconsin, that was an Art Deco 1946 Stanley popcorn machine. A friend said he could restore it for me, so I bought it. He took one look at it in person and said, oh, let me go find something else. And we ended up with another 1947 Art Deco popcorn machine. And it's exactly the same popcorn machine we used at the Palace Theater in Superior in the 70s. And we had to go to Pittsburgh to get it. And it's magnificent. It makes the best popcorn. It looks beautiful. And I think Jimmy Fallon actually has the identical popcorn machine, which he sometimes puts on his TV show.
See, we have nothing but stars saying great things about the stuff we have in Duluth. But so, yes, I've had your popcorn before. It is great. I think it's great enough to go to Pittsburgh and La Crosse and all the places you went to get it. But this time I was a little bit hesitant. However, I have to say I was impressed with your popcorn person wearing a mask and gloves. And I said, all right, I'll take a small.
Another thing, because I'm attempting to keep is up to date on the current circumstances as possible. At the moment, there has been zero cases of COVID attributed to contact at a movie theater anywhere in the world, which I think is remarkable. Hmm. And it also is to a degree due to the fact that in a classic old theater with large auditoriums, everybody's facing the same way, everybody's sitting facing the screen, well distanced, the air conditioning, in our case, state of the art, is 20 feet over your head and flowing from behind you over your head. And so I think if you're willing to go in any public building, we're about as safe as it gets.
And it also works when you have movies that have local connections. You were playing The Burnt Orange Heresy with Purple Rain. How important is that? We get excited when we hear Duluth, Superior, Bayfield, for whatever reason in movies. People do put those words in there from time to time. Again, this one makes a little bit more than one mention. How important is it?
I think the Duluth Superior region is a remarkable place that we're fortunate to call home. And yet, more often than not, it seems like we're nearly invisible on the world stage versus the quality of what we live with and have to offer. And so, you know, people in New York, a movie's filmed there or a TV commercial's filmed there, they go, well, yeah, so what? But in Duluth, you're right. I think it's a little bit of a treat for people to realize the whole world doesn't just fly overhead and never notice us.
Well, it's part of that thing that people who actually come here or who are from here and go elsewhere really dig the place, right? You know, they find what's special about it and they want to tell other people. Christina, what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on what we provide in Duluth for not only our locals but our visitors is so unique and special. I love that we have independent theaters to show film. Film is a beautiful visual art. We're turning to film during the pandemic and during this time of social unrest to really try and not only calm ourselves, even distract ourselves, but even learn about ourselves, such as what is racism, what systemic racism is, and what it looks like in our community. Just like we do in our galleries with our visual art exhibitions, film is so important. And Duluth and Superior are so fortunate to have access to independent theaters, to art galleries. We really, we're a special, special place and have a lot to offer for locals and tourists.
And even Mick Jagger.
I'd love for Mick Jagger to come. He would love the area. He would love the Twin Forts.
Well, he's already said great things about it. Bob?
I don't remember him saying anything great about Duluth, but...
well, he did say that the Toulouse-Lautrec was pretty good, or...
Yeah, and he did seem, you know, like quite aware of the city beyond proportion of what you would think for a toss-aside line.
All right, well, we've been speaking with Bob Boone of the West Theater in West Duluth. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Christina.
And yes, Christina Woods, the executive director of the Duluth Art Institute. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you to both of you.
The movie is The Burnt Orange Heresy. It was recently playing at the West Theater, and it is available on Amazon Prime. We'll be back after this.
What is this about?
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So is your business or workplace up and running again? Are you back in your office digs or maybe still working from home and planning on doing so for the foreseeable future? And more important, is your place of employment surviving the COVID-19 pandemic? And how well? My guests are Andy Donahue, director of the Wisconsin Small Business Development Center here at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Andy.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me back.
And joining Andy are two businesswomen he advises at the center, Leslie Heitala of Artistic Florals by Leslie in Superior. Hello, Leslie.
Hello.
And Carol Burrow, director of the Evergrow Learning Center in Ashland. Hello, Carol.
Hi.
So all are joining me by phone, by the way, as we, of course, socially distance radio style, if you will. Carol, the first thing I noticed when looking at your website is it immediately says coronavirus health and safety measures and mask required for all persons ages 5+. And it shows two youngsters in masks who I bet still have smiles underneath them, right? Tell me
correct.
Who these clients are. You don't have to say their names, but who they represent and what you do.
So currently, I am the center director at Evergrow Learning Center, which is a child care facility in Ashland that serves children 6 weeks to 12 years. Right now, we have about 86 kids that are attending in varied ages and classrooms. Our biggest classroom currently is our school age program, just because we've had a lot of children join us through this pandemic. But now with current regulations and, you know, updates from the CDC, we are now currently having both staff, children, and parents all wear masks. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the overview right now.
You said the younger children you care for are, did you say 6 weeks or 6 months?
Six weeks.
Okay, so that's young.
We have infants, toddlers, twos, three-year-olds, four-year-olds, and then our school-age program is 5 to 12.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I take it it's difficult for, obviously, 6 weeks, you don't have to worry about a mask, but right, for the toddlers and such.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what about the five-year-olds? How well do they take to it?
You know, it's been actually going pretty well. We just implemented that, as well as, you know, our city had implemented a mask mandate. So during that time, we had suggested that we start that. The kids have actually been doing a good job. I think it's a new thing, so it's interesting for the time being. But, I mean, it comes and goes. The staff are continuing to wear masks, so I think that's helping.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's helping keep them, you know, understanding the importance of wearing their mask.
Mm-hmm. Leslie, you don't have children running around your floral shop, at least not all day. Maybe you do sometimes.
No, I don't.
But how does it work? How have you been working? Are you providing curbside service, or are people coming into the shop?
Well, we did start by providing curbside service, but now people are welcomed into the store. We are being very safe, of course, because of COVID. People, of course, now are mandatory to wear a mask. We have hand sanitizer here. We're asking people to keep distance from us, but that's been working out very well.
And have you been in operation ever since it started? And we all look back at March as the beginning of something, or did you close for a while? You know, what's the history been like for the pandemic?
We did close because we were considered an essential business for the state of Wisconsin.
You were considered essential or not essential?
Non-essential.
Okay, right. Mm-hmm.
And so we had to close. So we were closed until the first week in May. So we did start, when we heard about the coronavirus, we did start asking people to do pickups outside the shop, and then it was became non-essential. So then we did close down and stay closed until the first week in May.
And now you're open and people can come into the store.
Now we are open. We have shortened our hours a little bit. Short of staff, but we are maintaining pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And Carol, your operation, has it been continuous since March or no?
So we have stayed open through all of this. We did obviously have some fluctuation in enrollment during that time. You know, once everything kind of started to really hit hard, we went down to about 15 kids for a little bit of time. And then as things started to reopen, we picked up pretty quickly. So we have kind of rolled the wave through all of this. But, I mean, it's been positive in the reflection of understanding that we have a quality, safe environment for children to go during this time.
Mm-hmm. Andy, one of the things you stress to all businesses is resiliency and changing plans and or even business models. You and I have talked a lot about that for startups in the first few years, and people end up doing an entirely different business than they started thinking they were doing. But what are you advising for established businesses like these trying to make it through this unpredictable time?
You know, one thing that we're seeing and that we've talked about over the last few months is to really be, you know, imperative thinking about where your business is at right now, but then also where do you want to see it to go in the future? We're in a weird time as it is with this pandemic where, you know, some businesses are struggling, some businesses are thriving, but a lot of businesses are pivoting their model to reflect where the environment is right now, but also where they can go in the future. And that's one thing that's awesome about some of our established businesses that we work with in our communities is that it made them rethink of how they operate their business. So from food and beverage to retail to childcare to everything in between, it made organizations and businesses really reflect on how they operate from an efficient basis, but then also where do they want to go from here? It allowed them to really look at their market and how they can capitalize on reaching their customer base, then how they can offer their products or services to a variety of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So we're telling them to really be resilient and, you know, think outside the box.
As I said, you tell that to people on a good day, right?
Yeah, or even the bad days.
Well, we're in the bad days, so yes, right?
It's really thinking, you know, how are you going to be reaching your customer? From personal standpoint, you have to, you know, we're all kind of in this weird environment where kids are doing distance learning, they're in hybrid models for school, to many of us still working from home and working remotely. So having business owners and entrepreneurs think about the same thing is, how do you need to operate your business in the same capacity where you're still going to try to reach your customer on a daily basis?
Mm-hmm. My guests are Andy Donahue, director of the Wisconsin Small Business Development Center here at the University of Wisconsin-Superior, Leslie Heitala of Artistic Florals by Leslie in Superior, and Carol Burrell, director of the Evergrow Learning Center in Ashland. So back to you, Carol. What changes have you adapted that you might keep after the pandemic is over? And by the way, the pandemic at some point will be over. How about that for optimism?
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the things that we have implemented, like the masks, and we do daily health checks as well for the families and children that are coming in. That includes asking them, you know, if anybody's been sick in the home. Same thing with temp checks daily, which I think has helped keep the facility very clean.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of that, you know, the sickness out of the center, which has been wonderful. But also now with, you know, touching base with Andy in terms of now there's distance learning and how that is working into the bigger picture, we will be offering the ability for children that are doing the virtual learning and not returning to school to be at the center for the full day. So that has, you know, brought a little different aspect into what we originally planned for having a school-age program and just having the bus morning and afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that will continue, because now there are a lot of students that will just be continuing going ahead with virtual learning, and having those children on site, they're giving them, you know, that safe environment for them to learn in as well.
Sure. I'm just thinking what you said about temperature checks. You know, obviously, child care staffs have always been mindful that a kid has a sniffles or something like that. But taking 5-10 or maybe half hour a day to make that part of the routine going forward does seem like a smart thing to do.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, I will tell you that, especially here, we haven't, like, knock on wood, haven't seen much illness, you know, and we've been very diligent on obviously sanitation and making sure that areas are very clean within the center. But, you know, using the drop-off time to really check and make sure that both the parent and the child is okay before they come into the center has been a huge thing for us.
Mm-hmm. Leslie, what about you? Are there things you've done that you might keep post-pandemic?
It's kind of with the floral business. It's day by day. There's never any consistency, unfortunately. Every day is different for deliveries. Every day is different for types of flowers. Of course, I've been kind of keeping check on what's coming up and trying to order as much as I can. We have different people that we work with, and we have found that due to COVID, there is actually even a little bit of shortage on some of the flowers that can come in. So you have to kind of use your imagination, which we do anyway as florists, and just create something as beautiful as we can, and using more designer's choice than specific pictures that they see online and things like that. We do a little bit of substitutions, but everything we do is beautiful. We try to keep a nice stock of plants in, also blooming and green plants. We do a lot of telephone orders here too, and it's just kind of working with the customers and seeing what they need and have different options for them, so we can help them decide what they can send for family or friends.
Mm-hmm. So you've piqued my interest with the flowers that are not available. What's really rare, and what would you direct me to?
Well, kind of what's rare is it's hard to get like tropicals right now, but in Superior, people don't usually order a lot of tropicals. But one day
Superior doesn't have a tropical environment? What?
Yeah, because it's usually 80 below here.
Right.
So tropicals can get frozen on their way up. But we also found there's, you know, some issues with some, because of COVID, even in South America. Some of your roses come from South America. And for 2 days, we could not get a red rose to save our souls.
Hmm.
But we just work with our customers, let them know. I think people have been very understanding. But now the roses are coming pretty steadily now. There is a local grower in Minneapolis that we use. They grow roses there. And so we've just been doing different things. I've been doing a lot of research and trying to find the best that we can do for our customers, the best flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have great quality. It's just been a little... Sometimes you just might not get exactly what you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, that teaches people to adapt to variety. So
yes, and most people do, to be honest with you. Our customers have been our customers for the last few years, and they like us, and they like what we do, and it's been working out pretty good. There's been weddings, you know, that have canceled, and so people have done little backyard weddings instead of big venue weddings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of what hurt us this year was no prom this year, and that hurt the business a little bit. But, you know, we just...
Well, people were doing kind of backyard, if not backyard proms, at least the prom photos. I saw no end of those in social media.
Yeah, we didn't get too much of that here in Superior. We did for prom. We only had a few things, but prom, too, remember, was in April, and we were closed in April.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came back into May, then some people still did a few pictures, but mostly the backyard, smaller weddings. But that's okay. We'll do whatever people need and whatever we can help out.
Carol, were you able to take advantage of the PPP loans?
Yes, actually, that was very helpful for us. I mean, we technically only opened in November. So for us, hitting the pandemic was kind of like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do as a pretty much startup business at that point in time?
Mm-hmm. And part of that, I understand, was based on what your employment level was last year. So you didn't have any last year.
Exactly. So, I mean, it was a huge help. It allowed me to keep all my staff on and still being able to work. And, you know, it helped us, too, to get the time to really focus on sanitizing and setting up the building, you know, going forward. So, I mean, it was great.
Mm-hmm. And, Leslie, were you able to get a PPP loan, or did you try?
I did apply for a very small PPP loan that did help with our payroll, yes.
Mm-hmm. Andy, I assume you must have advised them on the aforementioned loans. And what else is out there?
Well, right now, PPP, so the Paycheck Protection Program, has ended. So new applications are not being accepted at this time. Obviously, there's a lot of talk in Congress to see if something will be started again in the future, and that's just being held up, you know, in both chambers. So that's just a wait-and-see game from that. As for other funds that are still available, there is still opportunity for the economic injury disaster loan to be applied for through the Small Business Administration. But a lot of local economic development groups, local counties are starting to get some of the CARES funding. So a lot of them are starting to implement their own programs. So I think for both Carol and Leslie and people in the surrounding counties, you know, keep an eye out from announcements coming from your local government or the counties itself to see that what's going to be available. I know we do work with a variety of different counties and cities, municipalities, along with other funding sources that could potentially provide some different funding opportunities. So when we do know more about that, we usually do pass it on through our website, our social media channels, or news releases. So we'll be certainly passing that on when that time does come.
Mm-hmm. This has actually been a very positive conversation. The resiliency of both your enterprises is inspiring. So I'm going to throw some cold water on it and ask, how long can you continue like this, Carol?
Like I said, I guess enrollment for us has been up a lot. And I think, you know, all of this throughout this time frame, being consistent and staying open has helped us. So I think we are okay for right now and going forward. I mean, like I said, we have a plan for school. If school closes and we have to continue to stay open, I think we just have to kind of stick to what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. And Leslie?
how long could we go on like this?
Mm-hmm.
You know how I look at it? As long as I can, as long as I have to. Building this business for me was a lifetime dream, and I'm just not ready to give that up yet. So I'll just keep on going till I can keep on going.
Well, how many people get to go to work and be surrounded by beautiful flowers, right?
Yes, yes. And it really, it's a very positive atmosphere. And with our new location, we have more room to breathe in here. And we painted the walls, so they're very comforting colors. And people walk in and they love it. And every day I come to work, I'm in peace and I love what I'm doing. And I have excellent staff. So we're just going to keep on going.
Great. Well, we can't ask for more than that. Andy, what about sort of the macro level? How long do you think the entire area can continue?
You know, I think both of them said it properly. They're going to keep on going and don't want to give up. And I think that's where a lot of business owners are seeing, you know, right now. Is a few months ago, we had the opportunity to get things reopened, even though it might be at a smaller level. But things were able to be reopened. And now I know there's a lot of concerns for businesses, especially some of those seasonal enterprises that, you know, are getting out of their peak season and start going to the slower. So the business owners locally and around the region will be able to survive as long as people continue to visit them. They are safe. They practice social distancing. Make sure that local consumers are supporting these businesses. Obviously, we see the bigger stores open, and they have a lot of those essential products, but a lot of our smaller local businesses are what make our communities thrive. So the more that we can support them from that micro level will help them overall weather this little pandemic, and then we'll be able to get back to whatever that normal is going to be like in 2021.
Right, the new normal. Well, we've been talking to Andy Donahue, director of the Wisconsin Small Business Development Center here at the University of Wisconsin-Superior, Leslie Heidela of Artistic Florals by Leslie in Superior, and Carol Burrow, director of the Evergrow Learning Center in Ashland. And by the way, Leslie, you said a new location, a website?
A website is www.artisticfloralsbyleslie.com.
All right, Carol?
It's evergrowlearningcenter.com.
Great.
WisconsinSBDC.org.
All right. My guests are Andy Donahue, director of the Wisconsin Small Business Development Center here at the University of Wisconsin-Superior, Leslie Heitala of Artistic Florals by Leslie in Superior, and Carol Burrell, director of the Evergrow Learning Center in Ashland. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading, is off this week. But we do have reports from our other bureaus around the state. So, Brooks, let's start with the Minnesota side. We just heard all about the historic West Theater. Another iconic symbol of Duluth is up for sale.
That's right. The historic Old Central High School, that landmark right in the middle of downtown Hillside, is for sale. And a St. Louis Park, Minnesota developer wants to renovate it into 100 or so apartments. The school board this week had a closed session about the potential deal, and it could be about a year until a sale would be final, but it's the first time there's been real movement on the sale of the building since the district started considering its sale in recent years.
That does sound promising. Minnesota, actually Minneapolis, really was a leader in renovating old buildings. I remember when something, this is dating myself, called Butler Square first came on the scene, an old building, and it became a sort of mall. But Old Central is not the only Central High School in Duluth that's on the sale block. There's New Old Central or Old New Central or...
Right, or just Central, right? Just Central High School. That one is remains for sale, the one that's perched up the hill off the Central entrance overlooking the harbor. It remains for sale. Interest remains high, we're told, but nothing as of yet.
Right. Any potential price, by the way, on old Central?
I don't know a sale price, but I do know the building needs at least $48 million in repairs.
All right. Well, that could be a challenge, but an opportunity. Speaking of opportunity, going up the shore, resorts are beginning to emerge from the COVID slump, yes?
Yes, and they had a busier-than-expected summer, actually, and that's translated into a very successful fall for those resorts, cabins, hotels along the North Shore. As a lot of travelers from the Twin Cities especially try to stay as local as possible, trends are we're seeing, you know, more driving distance destinations as opposed to folks taking flights for their normal yearly vacation. And that has been a big benefit for the shore, one they expect to continue as the pandemic continues into the winter. And so a number of resorts have added, you know, snowmobiles to their rental fleets, or they're going to do guided ski tours. And everyone's saying, you know, advanced bookings are up, people are calling. Hey, what can we do? And a lot of first-timers are going up and saying, you know, we're going to make the best of this winter by heading north, as opposed to just sitting around waiting for that vaccine or otherwise going a little stir-crazy.
Right. Well, also on the COVID front, heading up the Iron Range, there's an outbreak that's attracted attention from the state.
Yes. So the National Guard, the Minnesota National Guard, has been deployed to two different long-term care facilities in the state, one in Austin, Minnesota, one in Hibbing. So the 90-bed Guardian Angels Health and Rehabilitation Center has seen 65 residents and staff test positive for the coronavirus since the pandemic began, and at least 9 residents have died of the virus. Now, in St. Louis County, nearly all of the 55 people who have died to date from the COVID-19 have been residents of long-term care facilities, and this has been a real emphasis point for a lot of the prevention and a lot of the as it spreads among younger people especially, we're trying to remind folks that this is who it truly affects, these members of long-term care facilities. And so on October 3rd, the National Guard sent a team of 5 medical professionals to help with resident care at Hibbing at the Guardian Angel facility. And the situation has reportedly stabilized. Folks have left, but as cases spike again, that's the big worry, is that it spreads inside these facilities.
All right. Well, on the Wisconsin side, a judge in Sawyer County has sided with tavern owners to at least temporarily block an order from Governor Tony Evers restricting occupancy in bars and restaurants during the pandemic. Laurel White has this report.
The judge issued the temporary block in response to a lawsuit filed Tuesday by the Tavern League of Wisconsin. The lawsuit is in response to the Evers administration's order last week limiting bar and restaurant capacity to 25% until November 6th. The Tavern League argues the governor needs to work with the Republican-controlled state legislature to order any new restrictions on people and businesses during the pandemic. The governor disagrees. He says spikes of COVID-19 cases in the state warrant a new state of emergency and renewed executive powers. A hearing on the case is scheduled for Monday. The ruling came just after Wisconsin set a new daily record for coronavirus cases and deaths on Tuesday, with more than 3,200 cases and 34 deaths. Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And a little bit off the COVID front, in Barron County, there was a dispute over a domestic violence shelter's support of Black Lives Matter that may have costed $25,000 in funding. Rich Kramer has the story.
Embrace provides shelter and advocacy services for victims in Price, Rusk, Washburn, and Barron counties. On September 30th, it released a statement supporting the Black Lives Matter movement and calling for an end to racism, white supremacy, and police violence. Since then, the Barron County Board of Supervisors has cut $25,000 in funding for Embrace, and several law enforcement agencies have stopped supporting them. Katie Bement is Embrace's executive director.
The efforts that we've seen by some law enforcement departments to lobby their county boards to pull funding from Embrace directly harms the survivors that they're supposed to protect and serve.
Barron County and the Sheriff's Department say they'll still refer victims to Embrace despite cutting ties with the group. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And in another story about private funding to government entities, a federal judge has blocked an effort to stop local governments from taking charitable funds to help with election expenses. Sean Johnson has that story.
The ruling was a win for the cities of Green Bay, Kenosha, Madison, Milwaukee, and Racine. They were awarded more than $6.3 million from an organization called the Center for Tech and Civic Life, which also awarded similar grants around the country. The group was funded by a donation from Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Chan. A group of Wisconsin plaintiffs, who organized under the name Wisconsin Voters Alliance, sued with the help of a Chicago-based conservative law firm. They argued that the grant funding was purposely directed to cities with a history of supporting Democrats, equating it to election bribery. But U.S. District Court Judge William Griesbach ruled that there was nothing in the law that forbid the cities from accepting the funding. He also noted that more than 100 additional Wisconsin communities had received the grants. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And that's the regional wrap-up from the Wisconsin side. For the Minnesota News, we've been speaking with Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
You can read these stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News, will be back next week. If you missed our debate series of candidates for the Wisconsin Assembly, you can always access our past shows at WPR.org. Go to the search field and type in Simply Superior. Or tune in next week and we'll bring you a digest of all the Assembly races in our region in our Voter's Guide on the Air. That's next Friday on Simply Superior. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view. Gathered to mirror your life and interests with the goal of helping you to understand the world we live in and the region we hold dear. By sharing the stories and information you'll enjoy and want to hear. Superior point of view, gathered to mirror your life and interest with the goal of helping you to understand the world we live in and the region we hold dear. By sharing the stories and information you'll